Chapter 11. The God Who Keeps Covenants. I was visiting in a pastor's home in Australia. One evening we were sitting at the table for tea, and with us sat the pastor's youngest son and his older brother. The youngest, a laddie about 5 or 6, when Daddy was called to the phone and left the table, and Mother busy in the kitchen, he mischievously pinched bits of food from the main dishes. An act that I was certain the parents, had they been there, would not have tolerated. The little fellow looked up at me with big eyes and said, "Something's going to happen," each time he proceeded to pinch a bit of food. "Something's going to happen." His brother did not join the little one in his mischief, but said, "I'm going to tell Daddy on you." When Daddy returned to the table, the older boy told him about the mischief, and his daddy was quite upset. Took him out and chastised him, brought him back, set him down again at the table. Looking up at me with big, tearful eyes, the little fellow said once more, "I told you something was going to happen." He was right. Something did happen. Now with tearful eyes, Nehemiah is looking up to God and saying, "God, it happened. You said you would send this calamity upon us if we did not change our ways and put away our idolatry. You have kept your word, your covenant. You did just what you said you would do. Jeremiah warned us and told us. God had spoken and said that something terribly tragic was going to happen to us, and now something unimaginably horrible has happened to us. And today, we, your people, are all slaves in Babylonish captivity, and beloved Jerusalem is utterly destroyed." Broken promises. Today, covenants between nations, governments, and men are not considered binding and kept only when convenient. Presidents and prime ministers break their pacts whenever it serves their purpose, and the other party to the contract is too weak to enforce it. Businessmen break their word and contracts when it is to their benefit and they can get away with it. Bankruptcies proliferate on all sides because covenants are not honored. A man's word is no longer his bond. Integrity is a word ignored, and honor is no longer a priority. Bankruptcy laws make it legal to dishonor a promise and break a covenant to avoid paying a contracted promise to reimburse borrowed money. Ethics is a forgotten word, and convenience is substituted in its place. Promises are easily broken because men have lost the priority of truth. One of the strong characteristics of the Quaker religion in England was that although they would never swear an oath because of religious convictions, yet they would never break their words once it was given. If they said yes, it meant yes. If they said no, it meant no. They adhered religiously to the word that Jesus spoke in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, verse 34. "But I say unto you, swear not at all." Verse 37. "But let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay. For whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil." They never swore an oath, but they never broke their word. William Penn, a Quaker, the founder of Pennsylvania, made no pact with the Indians, yet he never broke his word with them. They learned to know that his word could always be trusted, and it is interesting to note that Pennsylvania is the only state that never had a war with the Indians. A man's word was his bond. In the first decade of the 20th century, a man's word, character, reputation, and a signature were all that was required to borrow money from a bank. Bankruptcies were practically unknown, and when contracted, it brought great shame and ostracism. No identification was needed to cash a check, just a signature was enough. Now, however, word of honor is no longer sufficient because uprightness in the mouth is seldom found. Numbers 23, verse 19 tells us, God is not a man that he should lie, neither the son of man that he should repent. Hath he said, shall he not do it? Or hath he spoken, and shall he not make it good? God is not like men. He always keeps his promises and his covenants. A man may make a covenant and then repent and refuse to honor it. God will never say, my promises have become too wearisome and damaging to me to consider keeping, so I will break it. God is not a man that he should lie. He does not repent from his covenants. He does not change his mind concerning his promises. Also, covenant blessing. In the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 30, and verses 1 to 3, we read, it shall come to pass, when all these things have come upon thee, the blessing and curses which I have set before thee, thou shalt call them to mind among the nations where the Lord thy God hath driven thee, and shall return unto the Lord thy God, shalt obey his voice according to all that I commanded thee, thou and thy children with all thy heart, with all thy soul, that then the Lord thy God will turn thy captivity, and have compassion on thee, and will return, and gather thee from all nations where the Lord has scattered thee. Nehemiah's new understanding of the faithful, true, and just God that never breaks his covenant became the essence and foundation of his intercessory prayer. When Nehemiah realized that God had actually kept his covenant concerning the punishments, then Nehemiah's faith began to rise within him. God has literally fulfilled his covenant, Nehemiah exulted within himself. Therefore, I can truly trust and rely on his word, because there are other promises in that same covenant. And now I can make appeal to the other promises in his covenant. And Nehemiah encouraged himself in the Lord and took courage to lay hold on the mercy promises of God. God had made a covenant with his people. He made a covenant that included promises of punishment for disobedience, which promises had been aptly fulfilled. But God had also included that covenant wonderful promises of mercy, forgiveness, and restoration. Nehemiah took strength and courage, determined to seek Jehovah and repent and turn back to him so that he could keep the mercy promise of his covenant, even as he had kept the punishment promises. Nehemiah understood that Jehovah is not only the great and terrible God that keeps covenant, but also the wonderful Jehovah whose nature is merciful and love. He found that there are two sides of his covenant promises. Consequently, if he kept one set, then he would also keep the other set of promises. It is time. Jeremiah, whose prophecies of punishment and destruction had been fulfilled, had also prophesied a time period of 70 years for this punishment to last. And Nehemiah knew that this time period had ended, and therefore was living in a time for a return of mercy and grace from Jehovah. Nehemiah demonstrated that although God is a covenant-keeping God, and even if conditions may get worse, that need not bring one into panic or paralyzing fear. He believed that now the 70 years were over, that if they could keep the conditions of the covenant promises of mercy and return unto their God, that he would bring them out of captivity and return blessing again to Jerusalem. God does keep his promises, all of them. Because Nehemiah lived in captivity as promised, he believed, therefore, in the other promises in the covenant Jehovah made with his people. If shalt return unto the Lord thy God, shalt obey his voice according to all that I commanded thee this day, thou and thy children with all thine heart, with all thy soul, that the Lord thy God will turn thy captivity. Nehemiah believed that promise, claimed the fulfillment of the promised mercies of the covenant. His faith was made strong by the fulfilled promises, even of captivity. New Testament, new promises, new covenant. Every time the communion cup is used, it is a symbol of a covenant Christ made with his church. He said that he made a new covenant that was sealed in blood. What a wonderful covenant promises that have been given to his people. If his people can understand how immutable are the promises of that covenant, faith would rise up like a balloon set free to soar up and up into the heavens. Matthew 26, verse 27, 28. And he took the cup and gave thanks and gave it to them, saying, drink ye all of it, for this is the blood of the new testament, the new covenant, which is shed for many for the remission of sin. God said that he would punish iniquity, and surely he will fulfill it, that word. But he also said he would bless those that sought mercy, and as surely he will fulfill that word also. The great and terrible God that keeps covenant is also one, and at the same time the redeeming, merciful God in which to trust, the God that does not lie, that never lied, that never will. Judgments still come. Many terrible events that take place in our world today is because God is fulfilling his word. Sometimes we think God only keeps his word when it comes to healing or blessing or some helpful promises. But he keeps his word in many ways which so often are not recognized as God doing what he said he would do. Judgment is as much from God as mercy. The judgment of iniquity is as necessary as a manifestation of grace. Nehemiah had the proper understanding of this principle, so his faith became greatly inspired as he saw God working all around him. He saw him judge iniquity and not permitting iniquity to prosper and escape justice forever. Judgment in Argentina. God foretold in Argentina that he's going to send a great wave of blessing to that land, but he also said, woe unto you if you detain it. Then came the time when God sent a tremendous wave of blessed revival. However, many of the churches rejected that mighty manifestation of God's mercies. God's people themselves rejected it. Within 2 years after that revival, 56,000 young lives, according to government statistics, were destroyed in a civil war, just as God had foretold. God inspired Nehemiah's faith by causing him to see the honor and faithfulness in God in keeping his covenant of justice. That is one way God inspires faith. Beholding God keep his word on the side of judgment, faith can then believe he will keep his word on the side of mercy.